This is Scott Becker with the Becker Private Equity Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by Chris Childress. Chris is the managing partner and the founder of Edgewater Capital Partners. He's going to talk to us about areas they specialize, about Edgewater Capital Partners, and a little bit more. Chris, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure. Yeah, my name's Chris Childress. I'm a founder and managing partner of Edgewater Capital Partners. We're a private equity fund located in the Midwest, focused on specialty industrials in the lower middle market. We've been in our sector, offering our services to our investors for over 20 years. We consider ourselves really effectively unique in that we're the only specialty industrials focused group we know of in the lower middle market. So if you think about our definition of the lower middle market is target businesses less than 20 million of EBITDA. Our definition of specialty industrials are businesses focused on specialty chemicals, life sciences, engineered components, or advanced materials. We have 16 professionals, and including several technical and several investment.
Fantastic. And Chris, how did you get into this area? How did you get into the private equity business and into this area?
Sure. Prior to Edgewater Capital, I actually worked for a small unfunded sponsor called the Edgewater Group, which was focused exclusively on lower middle market turnaround, mainly of what I'd characterize as commodity manufacture of commodity parts and services for automotive and other OEMs. So, you know, think of stampings, castings, you know, things going under the hood, parts for automobiles and for appliances. But, you know, companies manufacturing things that could easily be duplicated by other people, businesses with very low barriers to competition, businesses that could be easily duplicated, for example, by Asian competitors. So I spent several years in those turnarounds in which, you know, there was a significant component of trying to change the paradigm of the underlying business insofar as you would replace management, you would introduce better financial pricing techniques, better operations techniques. But at the end of the day, we were buying businesses where the customer could go anywhere for what they were buying and could easily switch for a penny less per part. And as the 90s progressed and more and more Asian competition came online and the OEMs in various industries became more sophisticated in, you know, online auctions for parts and stuff like that, the lower middle market businesses got very squeezed and I started looking for investment opportunities where you had better barriers to competition. You had, you know, more basic Warren Buffett type attributes in the businesses you were pursuing. Being in Ohio at the time, that led me to interface with a lot of the chemical and materials executives who were, you know, had worked with Sherwin-Williams, had worked with some of the smaller middle market chemical businesses there, some of the smaller materials businesses there. And really, it intrigued me as an area that was really ripe for it was really open to exploitation, for lack of a better word, in the lower middle market by a private equity group. At the same time, cash flow lending was coming online for smaller businesses with, say, 10 million of EBITDA, when it really hadn't existed in the markets before. The types of businesses we pursue are not asset heavy. They require cash flow loans. So prior to, call it 1998, you really couldn't pursue a smaller, say, $5, $10, $15 million business in a leverage buyout because you didn't have the assets to borrow against. So you had sort of a strategic decision to pursue companies in this area combined with the ability to do that from a leverage perspective because of the development of a new sort of sophistication in the lower middle market lending market. That was a rather long-winded response. I hope I'm making some sense, but.
No. It's fascinating to see how people evolve into certain areas in the trying to evolve out of commoditization into where there's a specialty and at least better pricing and better value and better opportunity. No, it's actually fascinating. Talk for a moment about your firm and a few points of pride in Edgewater Capital Partners. I know you've got 16 professionals, so talk a little bit about points of pride in Edgewater Capital.
Sure. So I guess, you know, the sort of going the overall theme, you know, obviously the point of pride is we do think we're unique in the lower middle market. That you know, another point of pride, and they're all interrelated, right? But we, in terms of, you know, there are several private equity firms, I won't mention because we do every once in a while compete with them. But, you know, in the larger, in the middle market, say 20, 30, 40, 50 million of EBITDA, there are groups with a significant expertise like we have in these areas, you know, in the life sciences and specialty chem, engineer components, advanced materials. But under 20 million, we think we're the only ones who still maintain it. And so that's a significant point of pride. That point of pride is you know, obviously, and in fact, derived from the other point of pride, which is our people. You know, we have a great group of professionals, including, you know, our technical / operations experts. We have, you know, PhD in material science. We have two chemical engineers. We have a master's in material science, all on the payroll. And then we have, you know, a large group of very, you know, excellent, highly professional investment and administrative team that, you know, I would put up against anyone, but particularly up against, you know, people we compete with in lower middle, investment groups we compete with in the lower middle market. And which leads to, I guess, the third point of pride, which is derives from our expertise and our team, which is, you know, our returns and our track record. You know, we have not written off an investment this century. We haven't exited an investment at less than a 2x on our money this century. I believe our last fund had the IRR in excess of 40% net. So, you know, those things are a few of the points of pride. You know, I wouldn't really want to work with anybody else right now or want to work in any other area.
Congratulations. And talk for a moment about specialty engineering, industrial. What do you see in 2021, or what do you see generally related to private equity funds as this year evolves? Any general thoughts on what's going on this year?
You know, okay, so that's a little bit of a two-part question. So to step into specialty industrials to differentiate from specialty engineering, because that's another sector. But specialty industrials, you know, are businesses in the sectors I mentioned: engineer components, life sciences, specialty chemicals, and advanced materials. But, you know, the overall attributes, you know, those are very different sectors. You know, obviously, especially chemical is a product, liquid or powder, generally made from a chemical reaction. Engineered, you know, think of the catalyst in a two-part epoxy you buy at a DIY store. Think of an engineered component, you know, might be a highly engineered special turbocharger or a very high-end seal that goes into very extreme applications. Life sciences, obviously, think of ingredients that go into drugs. Engineered materials, think of ceramics, that kind of thing. But the overall theme would be solution-oriented products, right? Products that are built for that are purchased for their performance attributes, how they operate, how they solve a problem. They're not purchased based on their price, like the cheapest of the bunch. Think of small component costs, but mission critical. The failure of the product would be enormously expensive, but the product itself and the overall scheme isn't very expensive. Think about differentiation through technical service or the specific product performance, technical expertise in the product sales, technical expertise in the product application. So, you know, we've done a couple dozen deals in those sectors over the years. We have five businesses still in the portfolio. You know, looking at 2021, I feel like every year I get older, I become less inclined to try to predict the future because I am inevitably wrong. But, you know, I can go through the platitudes that we're all reading. You know, inflation is probably going to stay under 2%, which means money in 2021 is probably not going to get any more expensive, which means the capital markets will probably continue to drive up. I mean, I think they're recovering a little bit today after a drop yesterday. You know, the only sort of anecdotal information I can offer that you know, you may or may not be reading in the various, you know, financial media, is, you know, there does seem a lot of transactions by what we have seen, got pulled or broken up as a result of the COVID crisis, right? Some transactions, buyers walked away, some were taken off the table. quite a few sellers decided to punt and see, you know, what the results, you know, when are we going to come out of this? So I think you may see an increase in an uptick in Q1 and Q2 in M&A activity. We'll see when that comes to bear. And then I think, you know, there are obviously quite a few industries which have been changed by the COVID industry that are probably permanently changed. But I think you're also going to see a lot of pent up demand in, you know, as the vaccine is, you know, hopefully taken and successfully rolled out. Now, obviously, you're going to see a ton of pent up demand in travel. You're going to see pent up demand in vacation, pent up demand in entertainment, pent up demand in sports. You know, and that should have, you know, for lack of a better word, some form of economic trickle down effect in terms of, you know, overall demand. Cars will spend more time on the road. Airplanes will spend more time in the air. There will probably be increases in demand for fuel and other commodities. So, you know, I think none of the drivers seem that, sorry, none of the, I think everybody's expecting an economic recovery, and I don't think it's too complicated to look at where that'll come. And I think you can expect the recovery in those sectors to have an effect really on, you know, especially industrials go into everything. They go into cars, they go into agriculture, they go into drugs, they go into military. And I can't think of an aspect that won't benefit from a recovery coming. Now, at the same time, I think there are permanent changes that COVID has made to the world, which probably will take a lot longer to get better. You know, I suspect commercial real estate's going to have problems for quite some time, but, you know, I'm hopeful we muddle through.
Thank you, Chris. What a magnificent perspective, and what a remarkable job founding your own set of funds and the track record you've developed and grown. Thank you so much for joining the Becker Private Podcast today.
Yeah, of course. And I guess I should add, if I didn't before, that, you know, that what's been grown and everything else is due entirely to the team and to my partners, most of whom I've been with for quite some time. And, you know, I certainly didn't do this on my own. I probably far more credit is due to them in the development of this firm than is due to me. So I'll just leave it at that.
No, I think you handled the whole thing in an entirely appropriate, humble way with clarity to the team effort and the strength of the team that was built and put together. And that's what's resulted in the track record. So, Chris, thank you again for joining the Becker Private Equity Podcast. What a pleasure to visit with you.